You're listening to Trek FM.
This episode of To the Journey is brought to you by Audible.com, offering more than 150,000 titles for iOS, Windows, Android, Kindle, plus Mac or PC. To get a free audiobook of your choice, visit audibletrial.com/trekfm.
Hi, this is Robert Duncan McNeil, also known as Tom Paris from Star Trek Voyager. You're listening to Trek FM.
At home, and welcome. This is another episode of To the Journey. To the Journey! Wait, why am I the only one here? Oh, that's why that console is blinking. Shoot. Guys, Tristan is not going to make it this week. It looks like he is stuck in the pattern buffer, and even though I'm trying to do a skeletal look, I don't think it's going to happen. This is okay, though, because this week we actually have something very cool going on with To the Journey. It is a first. We have with us our first official guest, Larry Nemechek.
Well, thanks for having me.
So a few weeks ago, we discussed on our show the casting of Voyager and mostly talked about casting Janeway because there is a lot of news about all the, you know, the hoopla with Genevieve Bujold and everything that ensued after that. And then as we went digging into more research for the other characters, there wasn't a whole lot out there. So tonight, Larry is here to help us, give us the insider info, and drop a wealth of information into our laps. So, you've had the nice pleasure of being on the sets, Larry, and which had to have been an extraordinary experience just from the get-go. But the things that you just learned by being there, I mean, I can't wait to hear what you've got to say, so let's just dig into it. It's 1994, Voyager is in the works. What's going on?
So what's amazing is, what's ironic is, I wrote the Next Generation companion book, but I knew that cast and that experience the least of all the TV shows. Because we moved, after two trips out to LA to write, to do research, we moved in August of 94, which was like ground zero for launching Voyager, really. And and my wife Janet was lucky enough, she got to temp for 6 weeks when Jana was off with Michael Piller when they were doing Legend. And so Michael had like worked for a year, year and a half developing the show, but then he got the chance to do his own show on UPN, which was a great little show. It went before its time. And when that spot opened up for 6 weeks while they did the pilot, Janet got to be hired in. So she was sitting in the script office there next door to Lily DeFaggio and down the hall from all the DS9 things that were going on at the same time too. So the thing with Voyager was, from that bird's eye view, they had planned, and again, it was a January premiere, right? So it's a mid-year premiere.
Mm-hmm.
And this may sound shocking to people, but they were going to start filming originally on August 15th on the pilot, on Encounter at Farpoint, which sounds, wow, that's kind of cutting it close. They didn't have
to... Do you mean Caretaker?
Yeah. What did I say?
Okay.
I said Farpoint.
Yeah, it's okay.
Yeah, okay. The Alzheimer's is sad when it sets in. Yes, Caretaker. In fact, there's some scripts that say The Caretaker, which is kind of an odd bird thing. But so they originally were going to start shooting August 15th because Voyager, like DS9, like Enterprise, like Next Gen even, was not like a typical pilot that they make and then they go out and sell it. And if it sells, then they gear up. And if it doesn't sell, then it's a dead show. You know, it's a dead little weird thing. They knew that it was going to be on. You know, it was going to be on. So they didn't start filming until August, which means they didn't start casting until July. And
wow.
It always worked before. I mean, you know.
That's quick turnaround, though.
Yeah, yeah. So, but it goes pretty fast. It goes, you know, people go in and out, you know, every day sometimes. Three or four rounds, maybe every other day, you hear some of the actors talk about going in, for, you know, whatever. The thing that we know famously about Voyager is, of course, that the captain role, Elizabeth Janeway, or Nicole Janeway, or Catherine Janeway.
Yeah, one of those.
One of those.
Just pick a name.
But anyway, so the casting in July, they started knocking them off pretty easy. We can talk about that in a minute. But when they started having the delays on Captain, they bumped the shooting from August 15th back a week to August 22nd. And then they bumped it again to the 29th. And this is when they're like looking at every female commanding age actress, you know, in the Alpha Quadrant and parts of the Gamma. And they kept bumping the start date back a week and back a week and back a week. And they even sent everybody home from August 18th to August 30th. Like the crew, the production crew, art department, gaff light, everybody, set builders, everything. Wow. So then they set, they cast Genevieve on the 31st. Okay. Now in the middle of this, they cast her on the 31st, set it up to start filming on the 6th. Okay. So everybody but her came in the day on September 1st for a reading. Everybody got acquainted. They had their studio lunch and sit down. They always do in the cast when they do them, except she wasn't with them, but everybody else was. So the show was cast by the show had been cast except for her for ages.
Okay.
And then she was like a day and a half into filming, pulled out on Friday the 9th. What they did was when they dive back in to recast or go back and look at everybody again, which is how Kate got in, she had a horrible first reading. She nailed it the second time she went in.
But yes, I love hearing that story.
When they held up for that second round, every single scene that didn't have Janeway in it got filmed first. So the first thing they actually filmed was the Maquis cockpit scene, which then they went back and refilmed later because they didn't like the way it looked at first. So every possible thing that didn't have her in it, they filmed while they were still untangling the thing. So they get her on the 14th. We're starting with the captain, I guess, here the way this has turned out.
So Kate starts the 14th.
Yeah. They had her selected. That was a Friday. She came in on Monday the 17th, and bang. But it wasn't – it was like with the way they would do the call sheets like the day early. It was the first day that the name went from Nicole to Catherine was like the September 20th sheets. So anyway, it's just funny. The first 2 or 3 days, the call sheet still said Nicole Janeway.
Wow. I'm amazed at how fast this all turned around. I mean, I remember reading interviews when the show first debuted about how there was anxiety on the set. I mean, was there even going to be a show? The actors were concerned if they were still going to have roles, because if they weren't going to have the female captain, they did have the backup plan. Okay, we'll have a male captain, but then certain roles are going to have to change to balance out the male-female ratio.
Right, right. Well, the thing was, and this is what my wife loves to talk about remembering. The thing was, they had designed the show with Janeway and Chakotay and the Doctor, who was originally Doc Zimmerman. Tuvok and B'Elanna were the first two roles they cast. And part of that was because they had known Tim, Russ. He was the runner-up to LeVar for Geordi. And then they'd used him as a guest star 2 or 3 times, right? He was a human terrorist on Next Gen. He was a Klingon on DS9 second season, and then he was a helmsman on the B bridge on Generations. So 94 was getting to be a big year for them. So as far as like creating, I mean, there's a dual thing. You're talking about the casting of Voyager. You had obviously like developing the characters and how they can, you know, after the year and a half that they spent, Jerry and Michael and Rick. What's his line about, let's have some chopped chicken or something? That was their code name for
cheap chicken.
Cheap chicken, yeah. Let's get together at lunch and hash this out on yellow paper, on yellow tablets. And so a lot of the stuff, and they had worked on it so long that they were sticking things into Next Gen and DS9 to set up Voyager, right? The whole Maquis thing.
Right. Exactly, yeah.
Was not meant as this subplot that they stumbled into on Next Gen and threw it over to DS9. And what? I mean, the whole point of that was to launch Voyager and take a year and a half to do it. So anything you saw on Next Gen and Voyager and DS9 was totally created, which is why when you're watching the Maquis two-parter on DS9 and you look at the extras in the Volon 3 colony meeting room, and you look and you go, oh, look, there's like a Klingon woman in the back, and oh, look, there's like a couple of Native Americans over here, and oh, look, there's – it was totally to set up to get you even subconsciously thinking about. And it's why Cyril on something as obscure, Cyril, the Romulan commander who was in the Pegasus on Next Generation, is a black actor playing a black Romulan. And for the first time, the concept of races made everybody quit saying, you know, Vulcans and Klingons and Romulan races. It's like technically they're species because you could have racial diversity within that, like humans.
Right.
And one of the times when they started going to saying, everybody, you should say species, was because they had that actor was black, was African American. And they mm-hmm. did that partly so that Tim was going to be, you know, Tuvok, and the idea of going, oh, having everybody, like, you know, get their panties in a wad over having a black Vulcan, quote unquote. And they wanted to introduce the concept of, you know, and they used it with the Romulan, which is kind of cool. So the whole Vulcanoid species, you know, Romulan Vulcan thing. So they'd already, like, set that down. So they were doing all these little touchstones of Klingons and black Vulcans and Native Americans and things just to subconsciously. And you didn't know
of
course.
Not at the time. Not a clue.
Yeah.
We can go back now, though, and see all these nice little seeds they planted, though. It's fun.
Yep. So they had a lot of pressure doing Tuvok. Part of what Jerry said was, so the Next Gen was Sirius, and Deep Space Nine was meant to be a total pendulum swing away from, you know, not pretty, not well lit. It was supposed to be gritty, and they didn't all get along, and they had a way to do that within Star Trek, right? It wasn't humanity. It was all mm-hmm. the races. So the pendulum swing, what she said was Voyager was really supposed to be more an action-adventure, like the original series, have more fun, have it be humor. And they had really sat down to develop the characters and the interactions to go there. Now, mm-hmm. whether that's what the fact that the network immediately made them go vanilla after they got launched, you know, is something else.
Yeah.
But so they felt the pressure of having the first Vulcan regular since Spock when they developed Tuvok. And mm-hmm. But Tim was a fanboy. He was one that got it.
So he was a lock just from the get-go.
They'd known him. He had been in guest role. They'd had their eye on him. And she said he came in, and they had auditions. And Jerry said he came in quickly. I mean, he came in. They gave it to him quickly. He came in. He nailed it. They had meant for Tuvok to be older. You know,
mm-hmm.
Over 100 yeah. in Vulcan years. And he was never meant, they were always trying to cast a black actor for that. And they just lowered the age a little bit, and then they still never did. Then they goofed up on what they, you know, as you know, well know, they mm-hmm. would screw around with what Tuvok's age was. And then Roxanne Dawson, who at the time, her name was, she was still going by Roxanne Biggs Dawson because she was actually married to Casey Biggs. And they
right.
were just going through the divorce, but not until after. So which is why the pilot and maybe the first year, she's still Biggs Dawson, and then she dropped the Biggs.
Yeah, I think that was the first couple of seasons, maybe, or at least the first season for sure.
Yeah. So they read an awful lot of people over 2 or 3 weeks for B'Elanna, and then they go, like, this is the first one we read, or the second person we read is the one who's the best. So the more they went. So, and then you have the whole thing with Paris.
Yes, that
and
whole conundrum.
Would they just, you know, and the Nick Locarno.
Yeah. We all know that's who it's supposed to be, but the whole thing with the royalties.
Yeah. Do we really want to make Ron any richer than he's going to be? So, no. Ron Moore. So, and everyone knows that Thomas Eugene Paris, Eugene was the nod to Gene Roddenberry, just like Wesley had been on Next Generation. So, nothing about the character, just. They were coming up with a middle name, and it sounded good, Thomas Eugene Paris. And
yeah.
So I guess there's a little thing going back and forth, because at the time, Jerry was knocking down the Rick story about what we need is someone like Robert Duncan McNeil, and he said, well, why don't we get Robert Duncan McNeil? And
yeah.
And she says he was in a play in New York, and he auditioned on tape and was fine, and he's the only one they took to the studio for approval. So they had, like, winnowed out, you know, ahead of time. And for Harry Kim, she said there, at the time anyway, there was not a whole lot of Asian American young males in the casting pool.
Mm-hmm.
And they saw an awful lot of good looking people, but people that didn't have a lot of acting experience. And
okay. And
Garrett was a little less experienced too, but they just liked something about him. His freshness. So that's what uh-huh. they went for. And boy, he was fresh. No, I'm kidding. And
well, he was young.
He was only like, what, 20?
Yeah, like 21, 22, maybe. A little bit older than Jennifer was.
Yeah.
Because she was the baby.
Yes, that's right. And but the baby that blew them away. So
indeed.
Because Jerry, I was looking at my quote. She remembered talking about how this little girl came in and had this like this Lauren Bacall type boom that just blew everybody away. Yeah, and the fact that they wanted Cass and Neelix, which, you know, then ultimately they didn't really develop, but they really wanted to have You know, when O'Brien and Keiko was like this radical concept of, oh, look, a married couple in Star Trek. They were wanting to have a relationship couple, you know, a committed couple. And so that was, you know, Cass and Neelix. And have it be a Beauty and the Beast kind of thing. And that was, you know.
Well, some people would agree with that.
Yeah. And we're talking looks, not character. No.
Looks.
And they wanted the insight into humanity, you know, the Odo Spock data type observer on humanity. And that was originally going to be Kes and Neelix, and it really kind of fell more to the Doctor and then to Seven, you know, later on. So she was the Mayfly, and she came in about halfway. Jerry says she came in halfway through the process of casting. Unassuming, quiet, meek-looking young woman, barely spoke above a whisper, and then she took the audition sides and planted herself and started, and they were like, oh my God, where did she come from, this voice and presence? So so that she was like the best choice out of the box. And then Neelix, everybody thought was, okay, well, this is like the comic relief. This is the Quark. This is the... Did Next Gen have comic relief?
I remember TV Guide said that Neelix was supposed to be the breakout character of Voyager.
Yep.
Which, I mean, is hilarious now, but...
And he was in New York and came by tape. And here's the thing. Now, do you know the story about Bob Picardo and Ethan, Johnny, and Neelix?
I do, but why don't you tell our audience just in case they haven't heard it? Because this is a great story.
Because Bob Picardo, the first time I formally interviewed him for Communicator, I think, or Starlog or something, he told this story. So he has the sides, and his agent called him and says, okay, they're casting a new Star Trek. And he's like, yeah, Star Trek, I don't know. He was talking very casually to one of his really good friends, was Megan, and I've just gone blank on her name. She was the girl they stole the Dax symbiont for on DS9 in Invasive Procedures, and then she was Nurse Garland in Little Green Men. She was all over the place and still is. She was in a couple of shows as a regular that didn't go very long. She was a very good friend of his, and Bob Picardo was like going, yeah, they wanted to come in and do Star Trek. And the only funny part is this alien guy and Johnny, who they were good friends. Bob Picardo and Johnny Phillips, Ethan Phillips, were both the finalists for Neelix. And they
awesome.
Yeah. And they took them both to the studio, the studio suits, and the studio said, you guys pick. Either one can do it. You guys pick. And two things, he said later on, Picardo didn't realize he'd have to wear the makeup at the time. They were kind of soft-pedaling that every day. And he wasn't into the whole, he wasn't a fan, he wasn't the mystique, he wasn't into the, now wait a minute, Michael Dorn's wearing makeup, you know, Spock and Leonard in his ears every day. And he didn't know to ask those questions or get that. And he didn't know what Star Trek would turn into. And so he was like, yeah, well, they took Johnny for that. And they want me to read the doc. Partly through this, Jerry said, would you mind reading the doc? Because they were like reading people for the Doctor and nobody got it. And of course, if you remember in the pilot, there were just those two little scenes for the Doctor. Right?
Yeah.
And Bob will say, I read this description and it says bland, colorless, no personality, because he's just a computer program. He's like, well, that sounds like fun for 7 years.
I'm sure many other people were thinking the same thing. I don't want to do this.
So when he doesn't get Neelix, he's like, well, pfft. But Megan goes, they're just talking. And he says, yeah, they want me to read. They're saying it's mine if I want it, but I don't want to do it. And she like jumps out of her chair and like shakes him. She's like, what? Are you kidding? This is Star Trek. Are you kidding? You would be made for life. You would have loving people for years. I mean, it's like, what, are you crazy? He's like, okay. So he goes back in and he doesn't know exactly what he's doing, but he just reads the Doctor. And of course, in that snarky way, he was trying to do it. He didn't get it. When he read and when they totally filmed the pilot, he didn't get it. And it wasn't until they did the first 1 hour show where he has a scene with Kes, and he's like, oh, the whole thing about the no bedside manner and no personality doesn't mean bland. It means, you know, a brusque and abrupt. And here's all, and you can be an observer, and here's all the potential growth, you know, as you bumble your way into a personality and you piss people off, but you're the smartest doctor ever. And he's like, oh, but he totally shot the pilot not having a clue about that. But if it hadn't been for his good friend saying, "You get off your butt and go right back down there. Are you crazy? They want you. Are you crazy? Like, why would you do that to any role?
You get a steady paycheck for 7
right.
years.
Forget what it is. They want, but then it's like, cause, but he'd already been, you know, Emmy nominated for China Beach, you know.
Right.
He was well known. So that just blows me away that if it hadn't been for her, he might not have gone back in and taken the, and just think
right.
how that would have changed. Think how that would have altered the show, not to have.
Oh, my goodness. I think we discussed this when we talked about the Doctor. I mean, Robert Picardo is that character. I can't imagine anybody else playing that role and bringing such magic to it.
The Doctor and Chakotay were what they were holding up on until they knew that they were going to really get a female captain. Because when they had all the problems casting Janeway, they were like, the network's like, "Guys, we know how much you really want this to be the first female captain, but if you can't find somebody, we're going to have to get somebody, you know." And the backup plan
right.
was to have a female first officer and a female doctor. So they were reading both genders on all those roles. And my wife's talking about, she'd look out her window there on the first floor of the Hart Building and look over, and if she saw a whole line of Native American actresses, she'd go, "Oh, we're leaning back toward male captain today." You know, but that was the other thing was in the fax days, the fax number of the Star Trek office at the Hart Building got out to fans. And this is, you know, pre-internet. So we're talking about, like, mm-hmm. you know, flyered and maybe baby email. This is 94. I think I got my AOL
yeah.
in 95. So, you know.
So did I.
Yeah. So we're talking like, you know, faxing was the way you attacked your congressman or whatever. So, or your, you know, favorite show. So the fax machine for those two or three, and it was after Janet came in that all this drama happened. The fax machine was like rolling nonstop. "Don't you dare not cast a woman. Don't you dare not cast a woman after you said you were going to. You'd better cast a woman or I'm not watching this show. I can't believe you'd say you were going to." So they had all this, and they wanted to, but they had all this stress on doing it. But they were also like reading both sides. I mean, you know. And mm-hmm. kind of the way when they were trying to have this very diverse crew, not to get hung up on, you know, filling out little boxes, but the same things they were running into with some of the other very specific ethnic types they were doing with Native Americans. And you think, well, geez, they just had Journey's End on Next Generation with the Indian mm-hmm. planet, you know, quote unquote.
Right.
But all these, the really good Native American actors didn't want to be in a series for 7 years. Almost all of the really good, you know. And so then they got Robert finally cast, and they wanted to, you know, give Native Americans a face in the 24th century. There really hadn't been any. That episode on Next Gen was kind of the first time somebody went. That, and in the animateds, there was a Ensign Dawson Walking Bear that my friend Russell Bates put into the Kukulkan show, How Sharper Than a Serpent's Tooth, when they got into Native Mist. That was kind of the plot. And aside from that animated episode and this setup, that's kind of like it for Native Americans at the time. So they were really, you know, they were trying to, and they wound up making it a mestizo and not a Native American like we think of, but more, you know, Latin American background. And they went with the Mayan finally. They, you know, by second season or whatever, they kind of got into that and backpedaled it a little bit. When they went with Genevieve, they got the Doctor and Chakotay
oh,
cast.
Okay.
Yeah.
So
no, it wasn't until that. No, it
two.
Wasn't like 11th hour mania. When they went with Genevieve, they went, "Okay, woman, so bang, we've got her. So let's go male on the other two." So they had Bob and Robert, and they realized they had way too many Bobs and Roberts and Robbies.
And they did. Yes.
They did, yeah.
I love how they ended up distinguishing each other from that.
Yep. In fact, she says they went to Robert Beltran really early, and it was holding up on whether they were going to make it male at all. He knew they liked him. They didn't.
Uh-huh.
They weren't cast. The castings would come out. They weren't reading any more Chakotays, except unless they were like women.
So,
and he was like, she says, he'd been our favorite all along. He was standing on one foot and the other with his nose against the window, wondering what was going on in there. Why was it taking so long to make up our minds? And, but they were waiting to see how the captain was going to come down. So
they wanted to have Robert Beltran cast. They were waiting to make sure the female captain was going to work. Then officially made it so with Genevieve Bujold. And then Was there any more of a shakeup when that whole thing fell through, or had they just decided, okay, no, he is it?
They were invested in all the. They were happy with that, and they were happy with Papa. I was just going back through my notes. Jerry told me that she says about 30 seconds since the inspiration for the Doctor in Trekville was kind of Moriarty, who was the sentient holodeck character, mm-hmm. in the Sherlock Holmes in the two Next Gen episodes about Sherlock Holmes. And they went after Daniel Davis, who was the butler on The Nanny, his other main thing he's known for, because he was so good as Moriarty. And she said, for about 30 seconds, we thought maybe we could have Moriarty be in the show. But she's like, that makes no sense.
Would that have not been interesting?
Yeah, they wanted a holographic character. And then they says, well, we could have Doctor would make sense to have had that as a backup. And then it's under duress to have to be full time. So that's when they came with from the that. But yeah, so Bob was like, he read for Zimmerman. They're like, please read for the Doctor, and he was like, nah. And she says they never heard him. They were so under the gun. They didn't hear him in like the little local audition. They took him right to the studio and had him read it.
Oh wow!
And you've heard his story about he had no idea about Star Trek. He had no idea about lore or inside stories or about D. Kelly or McCoy or anything. And when he's reading his sides, it's a scene where they all walk out of the room and just leave him on. And he's like, turn me off. You've left me on. Mm-hmm. I'm functioning. And when he says, I did something you're never supposed to do. I improvised at the end of my audition. And he says, I had no idea that I was walking into something incredible. But he said, it's not like he had to really convince them because they loved him already. He didn't want the part, but they knew he was going to be great for it if they would just get him to do it. And he says, I read the scene like, I've been left on. I've been left activated. Isn't someone going to come back? And he said, totally on his own, what am I, a doctor or a nightlight?
Oh, my God. I didn't know he said that. Oh, that's freaking awesome.
And in his audition. And he just like went, because he was so, if he had been something he really wanted and cared about, he never would have done that. But he was kind of like, I don't care if I get this or not. I'll just stay in the moment and do it. And he said, I could tell everybody went, ooh, because everybody went, ooh, that was very McCoy-ish.
That was unexpected.
It was meant to be. Yeah. It was meant to be. So that's kind
clearly,
of.
Clearly, yeah.
But they were so thrilled. I mean, they were shooting everything without a captain. I think I went through the dates. It was, the 15th, the 22nd of August to the 29th of August. And then it was finally, they got her around the 7th of September or whenever. But by mid-September, they finally, and then the great hair debate.
Oh, gosh. Yes. Can we talk about that for a second? Because not only was there the delay with getting Kate Mulgrew, but then they had her shoot some scenes and then redo them. When they decided to do the Bun of Steel. Already behind at this point, correct?
And she had her wedge cut when they went down to the L.A. Convention Center for the Ocampa Above Ground City. They went on location with her hair in the exactly the same way it wound up being, the way she normally kept her hair.
Which is the hilarious thing. I mean, for those who haven't seen the photos, it's essentially season 5 hair, maybe a little less fluffy.
Yeah, and they went and shot on location, came back, then they decided to make the big bun change, and they had to go back on location, aside from the set stuff, they had to go back on location and do a bun head. And the bun changed. They did like two variations of that. So anyway, and it looked like it was almost as bad as Chekhov's beetle wig at the beginning of, I think. It's like, isn't your head hurting? It's kind of like screwed up in there kind of tight. So.
Yeah, it's true. They didn't really get it down until a few episodes in, but then of course they had to try the French twist in between among a million other things. And
yeah.
Oh boy. Yes, we've talked quite extensively about Janeway's many and varied hairdos and how you could tell things were really bad when Janeway's hair falls apart. Because then she's got the really disheveled bun of steel, the things are coming down and she looks like hell, and then things are really dire.
Frizzled hair, frazzled personality, yeah.
Right, yeah.
Well, it's funny because if you stop and think, they did the same thing on, Gates had her neurotic hair on Next Gen. Mm-hmm. And they kept playing with Troy's hair. And they kept playing with with Jadzia's hair on DS9 even.
Yes, Star Trek has a problem, or at least a thing, with hair.
Yeah.
Now, one final thing before we close off here is we're talking a little bit just in general about the cast. I mean, they each kind of had their own little thing. Like, I know the TNG cast was kind of goofy. DS9 was a little more serious. How did Voyager, what was their mix like? Because I've heard some great things about Set. I mean, they seem like very entertaining people. I know that there were pranks galore.
That was one thing with their cast, that they were pretty. And I know at times they probably, and Kate's such a hard worker that, I mean, she could you know, goof with the rest of them, but she was pretty serious about her work. And I don't mean the stuffed shirt, but I mean, sometimes the guys would really push stuff, apparently. And, you know, and then when Jerry came into the cast and Jennifer went away, Jerry was pretty fun-loving too. So she would almost kind of be quasi-tomboy with, if that's something you can consider.
Gotcha. So she kind of hanged with the guys as far as the shenanigans went.
Yeah. She might not be the instigator, but she would like roll with it. And yeah. And again, not to make Kate out to be a stuffed shirt, but that wasn't her first, you know, nature. If Kate was doing a joke, it was probably like something she'd concocted the day before or something, you know, and was
like
really elaborate and was
and
really
well thought out.
Yeah.
Executed to perfection, I'm sure.
Yeah, exactly.
Oh, that's fantastic.
Yeah. But no, it's obvious, and you can tell that when you see them when they have a get-together at a convention at Vegas or somewhere.
Yeah, it's always fun when they tweet those photos. They get together for their steak someplace, usually in New York, as you mentioned, and it's just really awesome. From a fan's perspective, I mean, that we're almost 20 years out now of watching these guys since Voyager premiered, and they're still getting together, they're still having fun, and they're sharing it with the rest of us. That's what makes the 21st century so freaking cool. Well, Larry, before we go, where can people find you and what is going on in your world these days?
Oh, my geez. Well, LarryNemechek.com, TreklandBlog.com, Larry Nemechek on Twitter, and Larry Nemechek's Trekland on Facebook. Also, my Trekland trunk, where I'm speaking of Voyager and things. I've had early draft scripts from Voyager. A lot of cool stuff up on the trunk. If you've really got some hardcore Voyager people, come in. I mean, I have the modern day shows, but since I was out in LA for Voyager and Latter Deep Space Nine and Enterprise, those are the shows I have scripts and set plans and stuff to come. And I'm about to get to go to FedCon, which is very exciting.
Oh, cool, in Germany.
Yes, in Germany. And then the week after that is Phoenix Comic Con, and we're going to, Todd Haberkorn and I are going to screen Lolani, the second episode of Star Trek Continues, where I played McCoy for the second time.
Yes.
And the third episode, which is the Mirror Universe episode, which is for the original series folks out there still, is going to be online June 15th when it premieres at a con in Australia. And it will be online that night, as it's been before. So that's
all
exciting.
Right.
Yeah. The Trek Tour. We still have 2 weeks more for people that want to put a deposit down and come along. And the big news also is that you can do the long tour the week ahead of Vegas. This is our LA to Vegas Trek Tour with Geek Nation Tours and Terrace.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But if you're coming to Vegas already and you're coming a day or two early, we're throwing in our last stop is going to be out to Valley of Fire to see where, you know, Kirk is killed with Picard and Malcolm McDowell's character, Tolian Saran, in Generations, right? That immense, incredible, hot desert valley gorge thing, the Valley of Fire State Park.
Awesome.
And we've made it so that people can come out for a one-day trip. They're just there in Vegas and come with us on the Wednesday before the con starts on Thursday. Oh, and I'm on the board for the Hollywood Sci-Fi Museum, and the Kickstarter is going right now. So I would urge everybody to go over there. And by August, the Enterprise in Space Real Science Space Mission Project will hopefully be launched, and I'll get to talk about it more later in the summer. But that's another nonprofit.
Okay.
That down the line I'll talk more about. But just to get everybody ready to hear about it when it comes along, I can at least say the name now, and there's a Facebook page. So there you go.
All right.
There you go.
All right. Well, as always, you're a very busy guy, and I thank you for your time. Thank you for joining us on the show, and thank you for dropping your knowledge about all of the cast. It's been so much fun.
Thanks, guys.
But casting Voyager isn't the only thing that we've been talking about on Trek FM this week, so let's have a little preview of what else has been happening on the network.
Previously on Trek.fm, Standard Orbit.
Arena Commentary.
They're like, everything is fine.
There's nothing. Just come down.
We have fried chicken. It's good.
Earl Grey.
Picard's Romances.
You say it's not great, Philip, but what I think you mean is it's probably one of the most forgettable episodes of the entire series.
The Ready Room.
The Romulan War.
That was, what, the 5th, 6th, 7th, 8th episode of the original series. Lawrence Schneider, he invents the Romulans. That was the whole genesis of it. And if they'd known that the Romulans might have been a recurring alien, they might not have given them those, you know, quote-unquote expensive helmets.
The Orb.
We find out, and Quark finds out, as we're talking about how he reacts and sort of comes to terms with what his mother's doing. She's the woman behind the curtain. She's the person who is calling the shots at the highest level of Ferengi society.
To the journey!
Ultimate Season 5 Marathon.
You could argue brother and sister, but maybe more like your favorite uncle who you once had a sex dream about. I don't know.
So that explains persistence of vision.
Yeah. Warp 5.
Archer's lost loves.
Not Dodge so much, it's just he's unsure of himself in that regard. He can be a starship captain, but a guy in love, I don't know about that.
Commentary, Trek Stars.
The TNG Companion.
He secretly doesn't know every time he replies to me on Twitter, I let out a little fan squeal on the other end. I play it cool, though. I play it cool, guys.
No, I'm the same exact way, but I don't play it cool.
By little fan squeal, you mean that sound Chekhov made in the last
picture. Continuing Mission.
The Continuing Mission audio drama.
Our writer, David Rains, is a huge Lovecraft fan, and all of these Lovecraftian creatures are from outer space. And, you know, the Star Trek characters, they're always running into, you know, these godlike beings, but, you know, they're they're not benevolent, but, you know, they speak English, and, you know, they look like William Campbell. And
Literary Treks.
Serpents Among the Ruins.
We'll always help Paris.
Wow, you just destroyed one of my favorite lines from my favorite movie ever.
We'll always have Iron Mike Paris.
Oh, God. All right.
And that's what else is happening on Trek.fm.
So check out all of our shows. We are available on so many platforms, I can't even count them anymore. We just seem to be adding more and more these days. There's a thing called Spreaker out there. There's iTunes and Stitcher. There's Windows, Xbox, and Zune. I mean, you name it, we can do it. Or you can just go to trek.fm/pd for the podcast directory. And guess what? It's all there. And none of these shows would be possible without the help of our sponsor, so let's talk a little bit about that.
Our sponsor for this show is Audible.com. Audible is the premier source for audiobooks with more than 150,000 titles to choose from, and new titles coming every week. From classics to current bestsellers, Audible has something for everyone. You'll be happy to hear that both Mosaic and Pathways are available from Audible. As a Trek.fm listener, you can get a free audiobook of your choice, along with a 30-day trial to see just how great Audible is. Just go to audibletrial.com/trekfm and sign up today. Again, that's audibletrial.com/trekfm, and we thank you and Audible for supporting To the Journey and Trek.fm.
Hey guys, guess what? It only took the duration of the whole show, but I think I found a way to get Tristan back in, so hang on one sec while I work my console.
Oh my.
You made it!
And I don't know how Scotty did that for 75 years. My goodness.
I'm just glad you're back, man. You missed a fantastic episode with Larry. Are you alright, buddy? You feeling okay?
I think I need a power bar or something.
What are we doing next week?
Well, Char, what we're going to do next week is, you know, if you watch Voyager over its 7-year run, a lot of people die. Now, I'm not just talking about side characters and bad guys, but we're talking about main cast members, and not just Harry and Kim. But everybody has either a near-death experience, or they actually die, or an alternate version of them dies, or they go on to a higher plane. And so you and I are going to talk about that next week and talk about our favorites.
That's right. So until then, everybody, this has been To the Journey.
To the Journey!